The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
I'm looking at Kermit and Kermit, where am I my music? And then he looked at me, looking at me. No, let me change it. I was looking at him. Then he was looking at me. Then I was looking at him. Then he was looking at me. Right? That's Kermit. What's up? Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, it is Finally Friday. Friday, March 27th. It's a little after 11 o'clock. In the morning, well, this is C.A. Neri, and I shall be your host for today. The numbers to call today are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And of course, if you're going to call from the family island, the numbers are 242-300-5720. And of course, I know I expect a number of texts for today. The text number is 422-4796. Today, I have more of a introspection or more of a philosophical type conversation, right? Is a historic reference to it? But let me slow it down for you. Some weeks ago, I saw some overtures by the Caribbean community who was suggesting that Caribbean, CARICOM in particular, needs to make some overtures to Cuba, that we need to organize ourselves and assist Cuba in some meaningful way, right? And I said to me, now doing some reflection, I said, I wonder what kind of meaningful way can we help? And I've had this conversation before in reference to, we don't have no oil. And if it's a blockade, we can't go beyond it, what exactly can we do? I was inboxed a GoFundMe type concept from some political ministerial position in Cuba, what is that? Bahamian people, I guess it was targeting Bahamians, can send forward money to assist the Cuban people and said, and you can list on what you want your money to be spent on. I smiled. I made reference to it on my page. And then again, we have a good leader, our prime minister, who I believe is one of the premier leaders of our region. However, he's been overshadowed by the prime minister of Barbados, who tends to make more regional and international pronouncements, right? Statements of reference, position statements. And I said, how come our leader can't do that? Because surely he is just as smart, just as gifted, right? What happened to our Minister of Foreign Affairs? What is our position in regards to Cuba? I see a number of advocates in the Bahamas are referencing that the people in Cuba are being starved to death. They're being put at risk. And as good God-fearing people, that we must say something. That is what my conversation is going to be about today. What should we be saying? But before all of that, I want to make a reference to a clip I came across. This clip is to infer what our position should be and what the consequences of our position, whatever it is, whatever we conclude it should be, the consequences of we deciding, and would we be prepared to live with it? The clip is going to be it's going to be 9 minutes long. It's going to be somewhat controversial. It's going to be worth listening to, worth commenting to, right? And I want to have that juxtaposed to the decision about the African. I can talk about that later. Kermit, cue up that reference, and as soon as you get it up, just play it for my listening audience, so I can have some commentary based on that afterwards. Thank you very much, Kermit.
People always ask, why is Haiti so poor? But they never ask what made it that way and who made it that way. What would your country look like if you spent the first century paying the ransom to your former oppressors, were blocked from global trade, had your gold reserves literally stolen before a foreign army invaded, were occupied for 2 decades, had every leader who tried to serve you either installed by a foreign power or removed by one, had your agriculture deliberately destroyed, and had your democracy dismantled every time it threatened powerful interests? And what if all that was done deliberately? Not out of neglect, but because powerful nations looked at you and decided you had to fail. Because if you succeeded, their entire system of exploitation fell apart. Haiti was the first black republic in history, the first nation in the Western Hemisphere to permanently abolish slavery. In 1804, enslaved people did what the most powerful empire in the world, Napoleon's France, said was impossible. They won. And the world never forgave them for it. In 1825, France showed up with warships and gave Haiti a choice. Pay us or we invade. The bill, 150 million francs. Compensation to French slaveholders for the people they had enslaved. Compensation to the enslavers. Haiti had to take out loans from French banks at interest just to pay France. Historians estimate Haiti was still paying off that debt well into the 20th century. That is generational wealth drained out of one of the poorest countries on earth straight back to the richest. And here's the thing. No other country in history has ever been forced to compensate the people who enslaved them just to be recognized as a nation. But let's be real about what was actually going on here. This wasn't just about France wanting its money back. This was coordinated. When Haiti won its independence in 1804, Europe was still running a global empire built on the backs of enslaved black people. Britain had colonies across the Caribbean. Spain controlled most of Latin America. France still had held territories across the globe. The entire Western economic order depended on one idea, that black people could be owned, exploited, and never allowed to govern themselves. Haiti blew that idea apart, and that made Haiti the most dangerous nation on earth, not because of its military, but because of its example. If the enslaved people in Jamaica heard what happened in Haiti, they might revolt. If enslaved people in the American South heard, they might revolt. If colonized people across Africa and Asia heard, the whole system starts to crack. You know what I mean? But the message had to be sent. Haiti had to be made an example of, not quietly, publicly, visibly. The punishment had to be severe enough that no enslaved person, no colonized people anywhere in the world would look at Haiti and think, we could do that too. The isolation, the debt, the sanctions, they weren't just economic policy. They were a warning. This is what happens when you revolt. This is what happens when you win. The United States, a country that had its own revolution not 30 years before Haiti, refused to recognize Haiti as a country for nearly 60 years. Why? Because Southern slaveholders were terrified. A successful black republic built on a slave revolt was the last thing they wanted to the enslaved people in America to hear about. So Haiti was frozen out. No trade, no diplomatic relationships, no investment. At that exact moment, it needed them most to build a new nation. Now here's the part that barely anyone talks about. Right before the US occupation in 1915, American officials literally sailed to Haiti and took the gold. In December 1914, officers working on behalf of the US financial interests, specifically National City Bank of New York, removed $500,000 in gold reserves from the Haitian National Bank and shipped it to Wall Street. Let that sink in. Before troops even landed, they took the money first. And National City Bank of New York, that bank went on to become Citibank, one of the most powerful financial institutions in the world. So one of the largest banks in America got a direct financial injection from Haiti's national treasury, a treasury that Haiti had been bleeding itself dry to fill, paying off that French debt for decades. The wealth didn't disappear. It was transferred. It built Wall Street while it hollowed out Port-au-Prince. Then, in 1915, the troops followed the gold. America occupied Haiti for 19 years. They rewrote Haiti's constitution to allow foreign land ownership, something Haitians had explicitly banned to protect themselves from colonial powers, because never again. They reconstructed the economy to serve American financial interests and suppress any political resistance. When they left in 1934, they left behind institutions built for extraction, not development. Sounds familiar, right? Here's what most people don't realize. The U.S. didn't leave Haiti alone after its occupation ended. They just got smarter in how they controlled it. What followed was almost 80 years of Washington picking Haiti's leaders, propping up the ones that served American interests, and destroying the ones who didn't. In the 1940s and 50s, the U.S. repeatedly interfered in Haitian elections and backed military coups when civilian governments looked like they might prioritize Haitian people over American business interests. Haiti couldn't get stable ground under its feet because every time it tried, Washington pulled the rug. Then came François Papadoc Duvalier in 1957. The U.S. initially supported him because he was aggressively anti-communist. This was the Cold War. Washington didn't care how a leader treated their own people, only which side of the Soviet divide they stood on. Papadoc used that cover to build one of the most brutal dictatorships in the hemisphere. His private militia, the Tonto Macout, terrorized, tortured, and murdered political opponents, journalists, activists, and anyone who threatened his grip on power. Estimates suggest tens of thousands of Haitians were killed or disappeared under his rule. And Washington largely looked the other way. When Papadoc died in 1971, power passed to his 19-year-old son, Jean-Claude Baby Doc, a teenager running a country. The U.S. continued supporting him because the arrangement still worked for American interests. Baby Doc looted an estimated $300 to $800 million from Haiti's treasury over 15 years in power. Money that should have built schools, hospitals, roads. Instead, he funded his lavish lifestyle while Haitians starved. The U.S. kept the aid flowing anyway. Baby Doc was eventually forced out in 1986, not by Washington, but by a popular uprising of Haitians who had simply had enough. But even then, it was a U.S. military plane that flew him to a comfortable exile in France. They protected him on the way out, just as they had protected him while he was in. What followed was a revolving door of military juntas and U.S.-backed transitional governments through the late 1980s, none of them chosen by the Haitian people, all of them serving outside interests. Then came Jean-Bertrand Aristide, a former priest, a genuine man of the people, someone who had actually fought for Haiti's poor majority. He won in the 1990 election in a landslide, the first truly free and fair election in Haiti's history. So we say, Haiti had finally done it, a real democracy, a real leader chosen by the people. He only lasted 8 months. In September 1991, the military led by generals who had been trained at the U.S. School of the Americas overthrew Aristide in a coup. Thousands of his supporters were killed. The CIA had files on the coup leaders and, according to declassified documents, had relationships with key figures involved. Washington initially condemned the coup publicly, but was slow and reluctant to act against it. Aristide was eventually restored to power in 1994, but only after accepting conditions set by Washington, including implementing IMF economic reforms that opened Haiti's markets to foreign competition, the very policies that would later destroy the Haitian rice farming. His return came with strings that undermined the sovereignty he was supposed to be returning to. And then in 2004, it happened again. Aristide was removed a second time. Armed groups, many with ties to Haitian elites who had long opposed him, destabilized the country. The U.S., France, and Canada sent troops officially to restore it. But Aristide himself said he was pressured to resign and effectively forced onto a plane into exile. He called it a kidnapping. The U.S. denied it. But the outcome was the same. Haiti's most popular democratically elected leader was gone. Again. After his removal, a U.N. peacekeeping mission moved in. UNISTA. Which was supposed to stabilize Haiti. Instead, Nepalese UN troops introduced cholera outbreak in 2010 that killed over 10,000 Haitians and infected hundreds of thousands more. The UN initially denied responsibility years before eventually acknowledging the link. I was in Haiti when that cholera outbreak happened, and I remember how people were just dying left and right, and it was the UN that brought that. Almost 80 years of interference, coups, dictators, occupations, conditions, exile. Every time Haiti built something, someone came along and knocked it down. And more often than not, that someone had Washington's fingerprints on them. Fast forward, the IMF forced Haiti to open its agricultural markets. Subsidized American rice flooded in, cheaper than anything Haitian farmers could grow, and wiped an entire agricultural sector overnight. Haiti went from feeding itself to depending on food imports. And that's just an abridged version of all the things that have happened in Haiti's history. So the next time someone says Haiti is poor because of voodoo or corruption or because Haitians just can't govern themselves, ask them this. What would your country look like? Haiti isn't poor because of what Haitians did solely. Haiti is poor because of what was done to Haiti and because the world needed it to look that way. If this information is new to you, share it because this isn't taught in schools.
And that was a TikTok video that I came across, and I said, I need to share this because moving forward, when we as a sovereign nation make decisions, there are consequences. And I'm not saying or trying to forebode ill will or scary consequences or anything like that. I'm saying there are consequences. Since there is a blockade in Cuba, and when I say since the blockade, I'm talking about from the Cuban Revolution, the Bahamas has benefited from Cuba's blockade. We've gained tourism, and tourism became our number one industry due to the blockade of Cuba. Since this recent blockade of oil, the planes that would normally fuel in Cuba now come to the Bahamas. We are now having an economic boom due to the misfortunes of what is happening in Cuba at this present time. And some would say maybe perhaps that's providence. It is what it is. And as we make maneuver in this world and trying to take a stance on our political stance on various things that happen in and around us, right? I believe there needs to be a national evaluation of who we are, what we are, and where we want to go as a nation, and also what we can withstand, what pressures that the Bahamas can withstand, right? I expect our leaders, particularly the Minister of Foreign Affairs, who have at the UN made a number of resolutions of regarding Cuba and unfair practices and declaration. I haven't heard him say anything about what is happening now. I expected him to say something that would in regards to what is happening now. But before we join various bandwagons and say and declare where we should stand and what and encourage what our government should be doing, we need to appreciate consequences. I just wanted to play that to remind us what can, may, could happen. And so that was that. And of course, you can always call and give commentary based on that. I have another thing I want to read into the record. A announcement by the UN. Let's see if I can get that. This is by Samuel Okudzeto Abalkwa. I hope I pronounced that correctly. We are immensely and eternally grateful to the UN, all 123 member states who voted emphatically for Ghana's resolution and express limitless appreciation to our broad coalition of people of good conscience across the world. The humanity, the dignity, and respect of our ancestors and Africans everywhere are being restored. Resolution A80L.48, declaring the trafficking of enslaved Africans and racialized chattel enslavement as the gravest crime against humanity, has not merely been overwhelmingly adopted by the UN General Assembly, it has victoriously delivered justice to more than 12.5 million victims of the transatlantic slave trade. May I express high commendations to my colleagues at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and in our mission in New York, Addis Ababa, and Geneva for their exceptional contributions. I thank our technical experts and global partners for Repertory Justice for their phenomenal output. God bless President John Mahama for his extraordinary leadership and unwavering commitment to this historic process. Reparatory justice is the winner. And this is a response, Ghana's petition to the UN to have the trafficking of enslaved Africans and the racialized chattel enslavement be named the gravest crime against history, humanity. And I just wanted to read that response and have that conversation, the conversation about Haiti, the conversation about what is happening inside Cuba, and of course the conversation about the Bahamas and where we stand and what we should be doing, all in one mix-up, right? I also want to make reference that the Prime Minister, let me see if I can say the right words for that, bring up my phone here, had a press conference today. And it was announced that Prime Minister Davis has announced that Parliament has been prorogued and dissolution will soon to come. And I want to know exactly what does that mean to my listening audience, that Parliament has been prorogued and the dissolution is soon to come. Which should we be doing? There's excitement amongst the people. A number of people now who were delinquent, delayed in regards to registering to vote, are now rushing to the various outlets to finally register. I believe that it's going to be a large turnout in terms of voting participants. A number of people have articulated that it might be a low registration and participation, but I think Bahamians are enthused. This election, like almost all elections, will be most engaged. I think that it's a serious times. You know, when it's very important to participate, this won't be one of those elections where Bahamians will turn out in droves, I think, to participate in order to direct the Bahamas for the next 5 years. Whether the majority of us will continue to support the Progressive Liberal Party in terms of their agenda, in terms of our trust, in terms of their commitment to their plan, the ability to execute their plan, their ability to say they didn't stray from the plan, or whether there's a need to change, whether there's a need to pivot again and give opportunity for the Free National Movement, who are saying that their way is better, who's saying that what the efforts of the Progressive Liberal Party is not adequate, and that there are some concerns and missteps in terms of how they govern the Bahamas, and that their plan, their manifesto, is better and superior. We see that their leader recently tabled a number of initiatives that they plan to do. They have put forward that their candidates, toe-to-toe, in comparison, will offer more opportunities for the Bahamas. And that's what the conversation is going to be about. And I want to have, again, all of that inside one bucket, where we now determine which way do we go as a people, what we want for ourselves, and how we should position ourselves moving forward. I mentioned and referenced Mia Motley recently. She's now touring the world, engaging, especially answering questions, because I find that a number of our politicians tend not to want to engage the public, especially with open questions and having ideas. We're seeing Ms. Motley is able to explain a regional concept. And some of the things that she is saying not necessarily benefits the Bahamas, right? It may benefit the region in terms of thought and culture and agenda. but not necessarily benefit the Bahamas in terms of short-term and medium-term benefits and how we manage our country and the direction we want to see our country. But there are a number of Bahamians who herald her as one of the best or the best and brightest astute politician in the times. And I know I had an interview with one of the politicians recently who was vying for position on whether the Bahamas should have more say regionally and globally or in terms of opinions, strong opinions, or should we play it safe? Should we play it safe in regards to how we respond to the issues happening around us? Recently, we had the Minister of National Security in regards to the, let's see if I can say the right words, the bombing of suspected drug dealer boats near Venezuela. And the question was asked, should the Bahamas be concerned? Should the Bahamas have position, regional position, on what is happening to the region? And I think the Minister of Foreign Affairs, that we in the Bahamas support the CARICOM, and the CARICOM wants peace in our region. But the Minister of National Security said, don't be doing anything untoward near Venezuela, and you won't be bombed. And I want to know if that answer is adequate enough for us, especially from one of our leaders, right? Don't be doing anything untoward down that way. I see we have a caller here. I'm going to engage that caller, and hopefully the caller speaks towards the conversation we're having. But I will definitely engage him and have a conversation. Go ahead, caller. Guiding Radio AM.
Good thanks a lot, man. Greetings.
Greetings to you.
Yes, you know what I like to say is, in the CSME environment, right, me and Marta would be the president. You know what I mean? She would be the leader. She is the leader of the Caribbean, the one most respected, the one with the most courageous.
Do you believe that we can foster a leader similar to her? Would have that same type of esteem?
The difference is subservient. You see, she's not afraid to speak the truth, to say the truth. I mean, you could say, well, the West, or we have to do what the West say do, but it's because they are doing this and that for us, you know. But we don't agree. You understand what I'm saying? You can imagine, right? Like, look at this vote on reparation, right? In the UN, right? General Council. You know, if the majority of the people in the General Council vote a particular way, right? And the ones that don't, that mean their views are wrong automatically. There should be no question about it. You know, and these same people, they go on the the General Council is only a rubber stamp. Then they go on the Security Council, nothing could pass. You see, so these people need to be called out. These people say that these people are evil, and they that's reason for them to kill you. You see, if you call them the devil, come on. But anyway, I guess, you know, like I say, man, just, you know, we need to just have some courage. And the media has to have some courage, you know. Don't be subservient for a visa. Come on, man. You know, the West is not heaven. Anyway, thank you, my son.
The West is not heaven. I like living in the West. I'm cultured as a Westerner. Ontologically American. I think American. I have to support them. Culturally, that's who I am. This texter says, Aristide entered politics with a poverty vow, but when he left Haiti, he had a net worth of $800 million known and said to have $2 billion hidden. I don't believe Aristide have that type of money. What in today's dollars is $500 million? What about billions due to corruption? Just like the Bahamas and other black countries, there is a romanticized history and the truth. I find that interesting. I'm not sure what race the texter is, black, white, or the other, right? But listening, just reading the last part, was just like the Bahamas and other black countries, there is a romanticized history and the truth. I don't know if I should take exception of what the texter is trying to say or suggesting, but I infer that he's saying that black people, when they are calling for reparation, when they are calling for accountability, when they're trying to decolonize their country and having a belief that a other particular set of people are superior and that we must try to remove ourselves and think of ourselves of being capable, that this text is suggesting that that is a romanticized look on history, and that in fact, black countries with black leaders have been, showed themselves being less than Western countries or established Western countries, and that the history that we are trying to put forward, that we are being subjected and subjugated in the past, is not necessarily true. And text, you can call up a text back to see if that's what that interpretation is correct. We have some more callers there. Prepare those callers for me, dear Kermit. Let me read this text whilst you do that. Said, good day, Brother Nuri. Until the House is dissolved, then the general election will be called. The PM is trying to feel the pulse of the people. However, a change of government is on the horizon. The Bahamian... Something happened to the phone. 1 minute for me. Discard. The Bahamians are ready to cast their votes today. From Grand Bahama, we are listening. I don't think that this is a test to feel the pulse of the people. If you don't know the pulse of the people by now, if you haven't tested by now and you call this the dissolvement is a test, then something is wrong. Let's go to the callers there. Guardian Radio, AM. This is C.A. Nuri. How can I help you today?
Yeah, blessed, C.A.
Blessing, man.
I appreciate this conversation. And so, you know, as commenting on what Dale says, we know that the United Nations is imbalanced. And so these global impositions, New World Order, et cetera, New Moral World Order, these will be implemented through international entities. But I just wanted to say, whilst me as a black man is proud of the Haitian Revolution and the subsequent impetus for freedom throughout the region, I still would like to just highlight a particular activist that who I was impressed with, and his name is Charlemagne Peralta, right? That nobody seems to remember. So whilst you're reading all those stories, I suggest that you read that. He was killed by the U.S. Marines, okay, because he was fearless, and they actually made an example for him and cut off his head and put it in some plaza somewhere. You see what I'm saying? This is after the revolution in San Domingo. This would have been during the U.S. invasion, occupation, and subsequent exploitation. But what I wanted to do is the truth come out. The reason why Haiti was so strong in the revolution is because they received the most slaves. That's why they have the most people today. So it's not like they have more balls than any other Caribbean slaves. As we hear these sporadic stories from Chris Davis throughout the region. Mexicans have great black heroes that they suppress. Also, histories about black people in these places. They have a particular city in Mexico named after a black rebel. I can't remember his name because I've read, you know. But what I'm saying is, we must speak the truth. The fact remains that they did not defeat the French army. The fact remains that Napoleon only sent 17 to 20,000 troops. The fact remains that most of those soldiers died from malaria. And this is why Christopher Davis made that they made the joke about this plant that zombified our people, and they thought people were dead. I can't remember the name of the plant, but that's the facts. So they didn't defeat the whole French army. And so that doesn't give us the reason to deify them or them to come and impose themselves on our country and have a follow throughout the third world, I mean, the Caribbean. So, I mean, what you said, we're going to worship and deify people because of something that really affected all of us. As a matter of fact, this particular model shouldn't be making schism amongst us. It should be unifying us and imposition, and nobody's lambasting them for the anti-social rhetoric that they're putting on social media regarding our passports and our citizenship. Why is nobody lambasting this particular community, man? Huh? We are called cowards.
Thank you. Passionate there. We have another caller there. Are we going to take a commercial break first? Let's take a commercial break, caller. Caller, I see you. I see you, caller. To two of you, I see you. We're going to take this quick commercial break. This Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. As soon as they come back, we can come directly to you. We'll be right back.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at 4th Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Grosvenor today.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good-for-nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair, you say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Hey everyone, get ready for a night you won't forget. It's Z Live's Far Back Friday Party with host Chicago Lang. Friday, March 27th, beginning at 7 p.m. Join us at Zapatilla State for a night of 80s and 90s music, dance, light bites, and refreshing drinks. Get your tickets at the Nassau Guardian between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. $50 per person. Cash sales only. It's Z Live's Far Back Friday Party. Real music, lots of fun, eats and drinks, and oh so cool vibes. See you there.
New roads and airports are connecting our islands. Energy reform is bringing electricity prices down, while young Bahamians are stepping up, gaining new skills for new opportunities. Respect for workers. Support for entrepreneurs. We're modernizing energy and infrastructure across our islands and preparing Bahamians to succeed in a new economy. Transformations this big take time. Let's choose progress. Paid for by the PLP.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is definitely the time for BAMSI to continue to build on the progress that we've made. There's now drone technology. There's now year-round container farming. You have hydroponics. You have aquaponics. You have precision farming. There have been record numbers of enrollments, record numbers of flat fishing certifications. We've had record enrollments in our online courses. Students from across the family of islands. Because in BAMSI, we are not just cultivating produce, we're cultivating producers.
Paid for by the PLP.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. The phone lines are lit. I also want to read this headline. It says, the Bahamas amongst nations being probed by USTR over forced labor policies. I'm not saying that the Bahamas are going to be put on a blacklist again, but we are being investigated, right? It said that a number of the companies we import and countries that we deal with, their products comes to fruition through forced labor. Right, we have an issue with that regarding Cuba in terms of the medical staff and whether they were under forced labor. And we see that we conceded and say, yes, their contract is kind of odd, wanky looking. So we discontinued those contracts with the Cuban government because a number of their doctors weren't getting their salaries. It went to the government, the Cuban government instead, which I'm comparing it to being forced labor, and I might be able to read a piece of that. But if you pick up The Guardian today in the front page, you can see that the Bahamas is among how many countries? Well, 60 countries. Yes, 60 countries. Their partners, who they import goods from, their products via forced labor. Let's go to the callers. Guardian Radio AM, you live? Go ahead, caller, you live? Let's
hey,
go
Louis.
Through. Hey, you live, go ahead.
Oh, finally, got me. You know, there's gold in Haiti. Well, about it's estimated to be about $128 million worth of gold. But then in Cuba, you got this cobalt, which has a value of about $28 billion. You know, we need that cobalt for these EVs, these batteries. But the problem is, Mr. North is going to turn his attention to that cobalt because it's just sitting there waiting for the giant to come and take it. And this is, seems to be the history of these islands that have all this wealth sitting there that's not going to benefit the citizenry. So I feel sorry, and I'm glad at the same time we don't have all that value here because they'd have been up and up in us trying to get all the feces out of us. And that's the problem with small countries and giant countries. The Eiffel Tower, I'm told, was built by the gold from Haiti. I understand Obama tried to raise the minimum wage in Haiti, but he was stopped by the Deep South. So there's this foot that the deep have on these Caribbean countries and their wealth. Now, what do we do about that?
I don't know. I don't know. Some people say with much wealth is much responsibility. Yeah? Some people say with much wealth is much responsibility. And if we ever find oil, if we ever were able to monetize sand and aragonite, perhaps things may be different here.
It'll be a blessing or a curse, Nuri.
I don't know. That's why I say things may be different here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But thank you very much. The phone line's
full.
Yeah, man. Guardian Radio AM, you live? Go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio AM, you live? Okay, the boards are clear. Let me see if I can go through this. The person called back. Let's get them first before the show over. Go ahead, caller. Guardian. Okay, you're playing phone tag with me. Go ahead, caller. You're live.
Hi, good day. How you doing, man?
Turn down your radio and it's all you. Go ahead.
Listen, I've been listening to your talk show for a long time, right? And I've listened to 52's contribution. He seems to be a very intelligent person. But what he spewed out of his mouth a while ago in Haiti, it's almost like he is revising history. He spoke of the ignorance, man. I'm not calling him ignorant. But he spoke out of ignorance. I'm highly shocked, man, that persons actually believe what he just said about Haiti. Have a good day, man.
Thanks very much for your call. See, that was a challenge directly to 52. And I say call in and correct the narrative. Go ahead, caller. Guiding Radio AM.
Yeah, good day. How you doing, Susan?
Doing well. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And good afternoon to the nation. Do we live in the vicinity of the global south, Caesar? Or do we live in the vicinity of the global north, the western region?
We are part of the west, even though we, of recent, are trying to socialize ourselves as being a part of the global south.
When you say socialize, what do you mean by that?
Culturally, we identify with both, actually. We believe that we're being dictated to and suppressed by an agendered northern concept, which can be foreign to us. But that same northern concept is who we are. The Bahamas is akin, annexed to American thinking. We are ontologically American.
Strange thing about it, right, Cecil? What's going on in Cuba today? Has the Caribbean region been successful in getting it to stop?
No.
Do you think the Caribbean region has the might to get it to stop?
No.
Do we have the military or the financial might to get it to stop, Caesar?
Okay, I see where you're going. I'll say no. But does that say we should not voice our opinion and concern?
Of course not. Of course.
So that's where we are. We are at the point where we are now speaking. And the question is, should we speak or should we not speak? And that's where we are.
What's this point? What is happening in Ukraine, right, as it relates to the war that's been ongoing for years now? Has any of the superpowers of the world been able to stop at all what is happening in Ukraine?
No.
With the war going on down there? Do you think any of the superpowers as much support as they could lend to Ukraine? Do you think they would get in the way of a Russia?
No.
Okay. And so, you know, the bottom line at the end of the all of the conversation, Cecil, is there's only so much that a small island nation can do. There's only so much that any small island nation can do unless their people are prepared to go the way of the citizens of Cuba. Do you think
that's the conversation that I'm thinking I'm trying to have without having is, are we prepared? Because we're talking aloud, but are we prepared to be as independent as Cuba?
Do you think the Bahamian citizenry, from what you know, and you're a man of culture, so you understand the psyche of Bahamians, do you believe, Cecil, with all your knowledge, that the Bahamian people are prepared to go the way of Cuban citizens?
There are a large cry of Bahamians who said that they're prepared to face anything, and that they will speak, and that they're willing to put their shoulder to the wheel. And I'm asking, are we prepared to go the way of, let me expand it, of Haiti, Cuba, Jamaica, Venezuela, Colombia, and the list may go on.
Goes on and on.
Are we prepared? Should we be having this discussion in a historical context and said, this is the truth, and let's make decisions based on this truth?
Listen, Cecil. You know, keeping us grounded and base as this conversation is right now, right? The Americans themselves, right, who've become accustomed to a certain level and standard of living, right? They will not allow their own president to drag them to a point where their cost of living becomes so high because of the tariff wars that is taking place that it makes affordability in their own country unattainable for the working class and for the middle class. They will not allow their government to do that. They will ramshack the United States before they allow their own president and government to do that, right? Do you think the Bahamians are any different, Cecil?
I know Bahamians love to be able to travel and that they have a right to go to the United States. And we're not prepared to risk that.
You know, Cecil, and I know you're running down on time, right? But Cecil, listen, Cecil. There are certain realities that exist, no matter how much you beat up your gum, that will not change it. Certain realities that exist. There are certain friendships that exist that no matter how, you know, it's almost like a big brother, a big sister in the home. No matter what kind of arguments or falling out you get into, you still need them at the end of the day, right? You still rely the heaviest upon them at the end of the day, right? Without allowing them to control you entirely, right? Which is what we have the right to do as a sovereign nation, right? But there are still certain realities that we must all come face to face with after you finish beating up your gum at the end of the day. Because beating up your gum, never pay nobody bills. Beating up your gum, don't put food on nobody's table. Beating up your gum, don't send your children to private school, nor to college or university. Beating up your gum, don't put gas in your car. Don't pay BPL. You understand what I'm saying, Cecil?
I understand.
Beating up your gum, don't put a roof over your head. Right? Unless you can back up what you get to say. Unless you can back it up. What do you say, Cecil? Like, am I making any sense?
I hear you, Anton.
Do you think we have the revolutionaries in this country in sufficient numbers that it takes to bring that kind of change on the international stage or arena, Cecil? I'm asking you an honest question.
And before I let you go, the question is, are we prepared to risk it all for the sake of justice? But thank you very much.
You know my answer. Bahamians are prepared. Thank you for the opportunity. God bless.
Pleasant. Let's read some of these texts before I have time to go. Just a correction, there is only one superpower, and that is the United States of America. And if the politics were convenient, they could stop what is happening in the Ukraine. But the U.S. is the only superpower in the world. If you do your research, you would know that. The political will and lack thereof is the reason why many atrocities continue. Let's see. Says, this text says, don't critique with visceral. The neglect of Haiti by colonials has led to the migration crisis throughout the Caribbean. Who can contest this? Where is the ignorance, bro? Go back Haiti if really want to help America, and France is your enemy. Okay, let's see. This one says, CA, the black countries around the world, including Africa, cannot demand reparations or change in the current white country's economic model unless the black countries and Africa have nuclear weapons to defend themselves and demand and dictate a change in the world's economic policies, or be smart like what Iran is doing by controlling the Strait of Hormuz and having superior missiles and drones to tell the white countries to go pound sand. And Iran is trying to change the white control petrodollar as means of world currency. If the black countries in Africa can do what Iran is doing, then we have a chance to change the current economic model. Interesting. This text says, as a black man who only cares about our blackness and what happens in black countries, I say we must first confront our internal issues and self, in spite of and build on our capabilities. We must stop defying the fullness of truth rather than assigning partial blame is our first step of reconciliation, first of self and our environment. I don't care what other races does or how corrupt they are. They didn't bring corrupt leaders to us. They found them amongst us. And then and now, and we capitulate. Haiti, for example, could not have done what they claim to have done during the revolution, or is it okay to be oppressed by one of us? Let's see if any more text here. Says this text say, so if what 52 is saying is true, then France definitely had no right demanding payment from Haiti and the blockade of Haiti by the French. An American was far more disgusting and inhumane than initially believed. Okay. Any more text before we leave? This text says, okay, that's a different text altogether. So that's that. That's all the text right there. No, I just wanted to have that discussion today in terms of what are we prepared to do? There's a lot of talk. I call it idle talk, right? And I want to remind the Bahamian people of the history of Haiti. I want to remind the Bahamian people of the history of Cuba and their misfortune. Made our fortune. And are we prepared to risk our fortune in order to assist? I'm not saying that we shouldn't assist. I'm just saying, are we prepared to risk our fortune and to stand the gap for these two nations? And if we are, I'm not saying that we shouldn't or we shouldn't, but we need to start having that conversation amongst us. What are we prepared to do to change this side of Jordan? This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a good day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.